Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Parenting is tough, and it can be even harder when your adult relationships are in a little bit of conflict or flux. We have America's marriage coach on today. You are going to love this conversation. Stay tuned. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net. And I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being our listeners. And it is super important that you support our sponsors. They enable us to bring you this content every single week. And we love doing that. New baby in the house? The joy of baby is awesome. And the pressure of baby can sometimes feel overwhelming. And let's face it, it isn't just about having a new baby. It's about parenting any age child. Now, lately, we've heard a lot about emotional labor and division of labor in the home and how many times that can lead to feelings of resentment and conflict. And even if you're parenting solo, you're still in relation with other adults and your kids. And maybe you could also use a tune-up in conflict resolution and nurturing healthy relationships. Our guest today is here for just that. Dr. Jackie Del Rosario has been called America's marriage coach. She is a wife and a mom, an author and an educator. And we're so happy to have you here today, Jackie.
It's my pleasure to join.
Oh, so much to talk about. You know, this issue has come up so much lately of moms and dads, parenting moms, parenting dads, and how moms still, even though they feel like there's some equity in their relationship and dads changing diapers or whatever, it still seems to always fall to mom to kind of be the manager. The husband says, the male says, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And the woman's going, oh my gosh, why do I have to tell you? Can't you just see the dishes, the laundry, the toys on the floor? Help us, Dr. Jackie.
You know, when you describe that, it makes me think of nature versus nurture. Mm. Let's talk about it. Physiologically, we are different individuals. So we know what estrogen has a tendency to do. It's a chemical reaction. It makes us nurturers, right? And so We have this concern about a lot of things. I want to repeat that because I was talking to a gentleman once and he was saying, you know, men are easier to make happy. Women are concerned. We're just not concerned about that much. He says, but women are concerned about a lot of things. And I had to agree with him. So
that's resonating with all of our listeners.
Of course it is. When you get a baby on board, it levels it up three times to the third exponent. Am I right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think that begins the answer. It's just that we are concerned about a lot of things. That's the way that we're built, to be concerned and to think about a lot of things. And as I think about my frustration as a first-time mom too, I just felt like my husband wasn't with it. Like, why could? And then I began to remember the research and what the literature tells us about the difference. So he's looking at function. We look at all of the ancillary things related to function, the color coordination, the feng shui, how comfort. I mean, men are just, does it work? Is this taken care of? As long as the diaper's on them, they're good. As long as they're warm. But no, we have to have all of these other aspects of it brought to a state of kind of perfection, if you will.
So at any moment, most of us are concerned about, I'm just guessing wild numbers here, 7, 8, 10 things, right? Like, we know when the baby or the kids ate. Also, Christmas is coming up. So we've got this plan, this plan, this plan. I already got this present, that one. The kids are going to need some new shoes because I think their feet grew, and everybody listening is adding in their own ands. The dads, most of them aren't thinking of all that.
No. We're very preemptive, right?
Yeah.
We plan for the future. It's a part of our nature because we like to feel secure. A lot of our security is in knowing what to anticipate and knowing that those things are taken care of. Men, on the other hand, are different. They kind of want to deal with things as they come.
In the present,
you might find males that are very much into planning. It's for different reasons and for a different purpose, but women tend to definitely stand out in that arena. We are just concerned about a lot of things.
And how to not be so hard on ourselves about that, and how to not be so hard on our partners.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things that I'd like to emphasize. One is speed. I think a lot of times we forget that we have 3 to 5 language centers. And so our brain is able to process things very quickly, whereas men usually have 1 or 2. This is why with our language, you know, we can pinpoint an argument and talk about what you were wearing and what you said verbatim. And men just can't do that. They don't have the anatomy, right, to be able to say.
Agreed.
So I find a lot of our frustration is where speed is different. They're going to need time to process, whether it's a conversation about the kids or a conversation about your relationship. You can give them the information. They might not be able to rat-tat-tat back to you and tell you, well, then this is what we're going to do. And this is what, no, they might have to process it. Mm-hmm. Look disengaged because they're more kinesthetic with the way that tactile, with the way that they process. They're going to maybe give less eye contact because that's the way that they're processing. Number two, I would say the monitoring or managing our need to feel secure with control.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many times we want to feel secure, so therefore we want to take things into our own hands. And so a lot of times we're wanting to dictate the how-tos, the when and the why and the where, when it's really not appropriate for the growth and the betterment of the relationship. And so for me, if the relationship is strong, then our ability to parent is also better. Our ability to raise strong and whole children is better. So I find that a lot of the breakdown happens, and even in my own personal life, during the child rearing, because it just throws a whole mess of stuff in there to kind of complicate matters.
Yeah. And throw in being exhausted and, you know, all those things as well.
And a lack of intimacy time and conversation, you name it.
Mm-hmm. And it's so easy. I mean, the child is the immediate, I'm going to say, problem. We all know our kids are blessings and wonderful and more than problems, but immediately there is a hungry being. There is a being that is throwing a tantrum. This is the thing that is very difficult to ignore. And it's so easy for us to just keep pushing the relationship stuff on the back burner and not deal with it and not deal with it and not deal with it. And Dr. Jackie, that doesn't work so well, does it?
It doesn't work well at all. I think that there's a period of time where it has to happen. And we're talking about the formative stages where right after birth, while you're getting settled and getting to know your child. So you have like that first trimester, right? Those first 3 months to kind of get that under your belt. And then it has to be that you swing, let the pendulum swing back into a place of balance where you're nurturing also your relationship as well as nurturing the child that you're bringing up, you know. One of the things that I just thought about when we were talking about the topic for this podcast was, what are some of the pitfalls that I think that we women fall into because we just don't know or don't understand, or we misappropriate what we're looking at symptomatically with what the facts are. So we talked about, you know, the way that they process. It might come off as if they're disengaged or uninterested. I think also a lot of men aren't very comfortable with infants. You know,
so very true.
More active when the child can say a little something, can walk. And, you know, it's unfortunate because a lot of times that's when we really want to see them bond. But not all males can bond really deeply at that level. You know, it really depends on their comfortability with holding, managing and caring for the child. So I noticed even as I'm looking now, I'm a first time grandmother.
Oh, hey. Oh,
you and Janet are going to go just you go, and go, me. Go.
I'm about to pull out the pictures and show you and everything. I'm just doting still.
How old's your grandbaby, Jackie?
When I say first time, and within like a year, I've had like 2.
Ooh.
I was childless, grandchildless. And now I have a new one that's just 2 months old.
Oh.
And then I have a 2-year-old.
Mine's almost two.
So it's a little more than a year. So within a year, I had one and then got the announcement of my son having a second one. So that's what I mean. So
nice.
That. But
yeah.
But I would say my own husband was not comfortable. My son is not that comfortable. You know, he's better than my husband was. So for the first month or and a half, he was like, well, you take care of him and I'll help, but I don't want to be the primary, or I don't want to have to do too much with him in the run of a day. And now he's getting better. You can see that his ability to engage with the child and be the primary point of care is getting, you know, longer and longer. And I can see that he's more relaxed.
Mm-hmm. What that brings up for me, because I did this when my kids were little, was I thought I could do it better than he could. I could put the kids to bed better than he could. And I mean, that was not a good place to be operating from at all. But I just was truly in that place of like, only I can do this for these children. So we have to kind of let go of kind of that control that you were talking about. Gotta let go a little bit and realize he is going to do it differently than you are. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Probably 99% of the time, that is A-okay, because your kids need that difference in their life too.
I do. And I think you bring up a really good point of just being comfortable, because I think most mothers want to make the dad do it the way that they do it, instead of just allowing them to have their autonomy and to do it differently. I was reading something really interesting yesterday, and it was just talking about how, I don't know if they're single moms that are paying attention to, you know, or listening now, but, you know, single moms have it very hard. But what we found is that the impact of the father, as long as he's engaged, is so important to the outcome, the well-being of the child. It's more important, they found, than is the female's input. Mm-hmm. So if you have a single dad that's raising a child by himself, the trajectory of that child's future is brighter usually than if they were raised by a single mom. So even though they might not dress the child well, they might not comb their hair, even though they might not put them to bed on the dot, you know, at 7 p.m. as we would want, they're very
happy. Yeah. And I do, and we've talked about solo moms on here before. We know many of our moms are parenting solo, and the importance of just bringing other men into their child's life. And
absolutely,
a coach, a teacher, an uncle, a neighbor, so that their kids, no matter if boys or girls, can experience a male presence in their life.
Someone that they can talk with, that they can see the difference between the male and the female energy, which I think is really important, the way that we do things differently. Have you ever noticed that when you try to tell your kid to do something and they don't listen the first time, the dad can just come and say, pick that up one time, and the kid just snaps up and picks it up. It's a difference.
Daddy voice.
Well, it's a difference in the octave of the voice. Their command is different. And so I think that there's a real emphasis on the difference between the male and the female energy, and that we just have to make sure that we bring both around our children. Whether you're a single dad or whether you're a single mom, there should be an uncle. Maybe there's another family member or a neighbor. Or might be a mentor at school or a coach or someone that has taken an interest and that can be a really good influence on your child.
You know, it is always so much easier for me to sit here, calm moments, having discussions with Janet, with our guests. Yes, absolutely. We need the male energy. We need the female energy. We need to let go. We need to communicate. We need to partner. And then real life happens, and I'm not on a Zoom conversation with Dr. Jackie, and I let all my stuff build up and all my resentment, and I think I've been dealing with it, but then, you know, there's this terrible outburst, and I say some things that I even know I shouldn't be saying to my husband. Now is not a helpful time, not a helpful place, but I'm so angry I do it anyway, Jackie. So let's talk about, you know, how can we operationalize some of these healthy marriage, healthy relationship techniques? Because it's all a lot easier when we're sitting here calmly. How do we bring this into our lives that we can access these tools when we're short on sleep and the baby's been crying for what seems like 4 hours?
And there's also a sense of great overwhelmingness. We feel so overwhelmed and so burdened with all the responsibilities. I think that one of the biggest tools will be effective communication. So when we're feeling that way, being able to communicate that in a way that can be heard and received by the listener is essential. Not to say, oh my God, but to say, you know, at this moment, I just feel overwhelmed. And I don't want to say the wrong thing because it's really no one's fault. So to communicate thoughts in a way that can be heard, using I statements instead of, you know, you're not helping now, starting a conversation with an accusation. Those are communication tips that I would say are must-haves, using reflective listening. Because I find that when you're sleep deprived or when your emotions are at a heightened state, you tend to mishear and misprocess information. So being able to make sure even that the message was received correctly is important. Make room for people to receive you and to give you what it is that you need. So I would say as my third statement, it would be to know what you need in that moment. You've already identified what you feel. You've already stated what you feel, what you felt. You've used the right means to express that. Now know what it is that you need. You know how many times I counsel couples and they don't know what they need?
Exactly.
Okay, so how would you like for them to do it? And you don't know. I would be aware of where I am at that moment so that you're able to communicate it. Now you are not standing by yourself speaking to something. You're speaking to someone that can empathize, understand, and now begin to play a part. I also feel that a lot of times we are afraid of asking for what we want.
But I think many of us, not all, but many of us, both male and female, have gotten the message from various people, spoken and unspoken through our lives, that what we want is too much. Mm-hmm. It's asking for too much. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if I just keep quiet, then maybe people will stay around me. But if I state what I want and what I need, I risk driving everybody away and being alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And if you say it and they say no, then so you're in a deeper, darker place, right?
But you're dealing with propositions, nothing that's factual. I call it watching the movie, which is really not just a movie. You've rehearsed something in your mind, you've gone through it, and it's hypothetical. That's watching the movie, which in most cases are going to be because of fear and our tendency to want to avoid negative experiences. You're really going to be watching a horror flick, and you're having your mate in the leading role, you know? So I say, don't watch the movie. Instead, begin to visualize, if you are going to watch anything, change the channel to something that's positive. Mm-hmm. And instead talk about rehearsing how you're going to introduce what it is that you're going to say in a way that can be heard and received. And then show up to the conversation, ready to be organic in that moment, ready to hear and ready to speak.
And right. I just want to add, because this goes back to what we were talking about, male processing speeds. And we've talked about this before so much, is that women tend to process verbally. We want all the details. We want the emotions. We want the color of the sky. And our men do not. Our boys do not. They want the essence. So what you're saying is get on the right channel. And that channel is very short phrases. We don't have to fill in all the detail to get clear with ourselves about what that is we want and need, and then take away all the fluff around it.
Let me go back and reiterate, because I want to be very clear. The first part of what I was giving were things for you to do in terms of how to use effective communication tools. Mm-hmm. But then I'm saying, if you have stuff inside and you're not expressing it, don't watch the movie. You're not expressing it because you're afraid that something bad will happen when you share what's really on your heart. So I'm saying, don't do that. Don't watch the movie. This is hypothetical. You're imagining that negative things are going to happen. So guess what happens? Negative things. What you focus on, you draw to yourself. So if you're focusing on a fear-filled scenario, you'll bring that to yourself in one way or another. So I'm saying, instead, focus on what you need to express and how you're going to deploy the proper communication techniques to communicate that. And then choose your time and your place, and then let's have a go of it.
Let's talk about that part, the choosing the time and the place, because, as you know, you had two sons that you and your husband raised. I have four. Janet, you had two. there's not a lot of ideal times, if any. You know, you've got the kids and all their stuff that they're dealing with, and you likely both have busy lives, and you are often feel like you're barely holding it together, getting all the things done. And for a lot of men, and maybe I'm just speaking from the men that I have experience with, but they do not like to hear the words, "Hey, can we talk later?" So how do you go about making the space, finding the space for this amidst all the busyness and uncertainty without totally freaking him out too, that his head's spiraling into, oh my goodness.
What now?
I think that let's talk thing shouldn't be a one-time thing. You should build conversation and that intimacy to converse into your lifestyle. So for example, my husband and I have a rule. Our last 30 minutes before we go to sleep is always time spent together. So if it means that there's a game on and he has to come to bed earlier before he gets too tired, then that's what we both set aside as our time. And sometimes we had rituals where we would rustle each other and tease each other at night, you know, within those 30 minutes. But mostly we talk. We talk about our day. We talk about things, aspirations. We talk about plans. We talk about the children. We talk about whatever needs to be discussed. Now, there's one thing that I notice about marriage, and that is that, you know, we plan when we're falling in love, like what we're going to do, what kind of lifestyle we're going to have. But I feel that a lot of times we don't watch. We're not watchful over our relationship when we're married. We're both leaving the house, going out to do different things, mm-hmm. coming back as different individuals because what we've encountered out there has changed us. So how do you make sure that you keep the cohesion?
Yeah.
And stay unified and continue to build intimacy.
More about how to keep good communication going, build intimacy, stay connected with our partners, and, you know, that can only benefit our children. More with Dr. Jackie after these messages from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk, and ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only U.S.-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast, and it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer, and additional terms and conditions may apply. We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet, but a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten Easy Melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve and I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin now.
Yeah, no, and they taste good and they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys.
So intimacy to me is not just sexual. It's in the heart-to-heart sharing. Now, I believe men need cliff notes. So I'm not going to say, and then she said this, and then I said that. That you give to your girlfriends. He's just not wired to hear that verbose conversation. But there needs to be the sharing so that you can come back together again and reunify so that over time, you don't lose touch. Another tip that I give is, apart from building communication in so that it's always a part, I think that you also have to continue to embrace some sort of, or rekindle. I'm saying re, because a lot of times the flame will start to go out during the child rearing stages. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep that flame lit? Simple things like a rule around how you greet each other. Do you kiss in the mouth every day? Now, I'm sure that there's some newlyweds that are only like 3-5 years in the marriage. They're thinking like, kiss in the mouth. Of course we do. Okay, well, if God blesses you well enough to be married 10, 15, 20, 30 years, for me, it'll be 34. These are things that you need to do, because while you're running to these different games and practices and picking up from school and getting this presentation ready for work, you'd be surprised.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to confess a truth right here. My husband and I just looked at each other yesterday and we realized it's been weeks since we've kissed on the mouth. Now, first he had a cold sore, then he was gone, then he came home and the cold sore was still lingering, and then I got COVID. So there's reasons. It can be that simple to get caught up in life and time goes on and suddenly you're like, wait a second. And when there's reasons when you can't physically connect in that way, you can find other ways to connect. And what you're saying is you have to intentionally nurture that, because if you don't, amidst the busyness of kids,
you'll look up and he'll be over there. You'll be here and you'll wonder, how did we get in these opposite ends of the room? And it's because you weren't watchful. So another thing, even planning when, you know, your sexual interludes, those that are really romantic and passionate, set aside from, if it's, I don't know what your pace would be, once a week, twice a week, three times, whatever it is, you have to make that something that you hardwire in while you're in the child rearing stages, because you lose spontaneity.
Yeah.
You lose spontaneity, which is the thing that really fuels passion. And so let's talk about, if we could, of just a few, I wanted to talk about that, because this is something that I really, really, really try to tell our younger listeners, because what I've noticed is that they're having more problems sexually at a younger age. I'm talking 30s, 40s, and they're looking on rekindling. And I'm like, my God, I was a ball of molten lava. And I think it's because of the way that they are, I guess, connecting with each other, and just the way that they're living life is a little different. So already some of the things that we need to do have already been teased out. Mm-hmm. And so I would say finding a way to schedule your children's lives. So for example, if you say they got to have a bedtime by 8 o'clock, so that means that leaves you 8 to 9 to maybe finish cleaning things up around the house, maybe to grab your favorite show. Then you have like maybe whatever the last amount of time for the night with your spouse alone. Mm-hmm. Making sure that we don't start bad habits like letting our children sleep in the bed with us, so that when it's time to wean them, now they don't want to go to their own room. You know, putting things in place with the forethought to think about, what is this going to look like 6 months to a year from now? Is this going to be something that's tenable? Is this going to be something that's going to help our relationship, hurt our relationship, or support our child? I mean, I think this, the forethought that you put into your planning and your decision-making as parents, that I think is going to make the greatest difference, not only for your children, but for your own union as well.
While we are on this topic of intimacy and setting aside time and protecting time and space, let's talk about how this gets even more challenging, I think, when your kids start hitting the tween and teenage years. Because when they are toddlers, yes, you can put them to bed and they're going to be out and they will be asleep. Teenagers never sleep, Dr. Jackie. Wow. They never, ever, ever sleep.
You're right.
Right. And they are, you know, like they're just embarrassed by the fact that you exist. Let's talk about this.
Well, so what do you want to talk about in regards to that topic? What do we
I have legitimate questions. Now, my children are now young adults, so I've survived the teenage years. But when they were teens, that was like my divorce time and My significant other had a different house, so sex was easy, okay? But if you're all in the same house, I have no idea how you make that work. Let's talk about that for other people who are struggling with
boundaries.
This.
I'm going to put it in that word, boundaries. Mm. And again, it talks about the structure and the routine of what is the norm for your children. So to me, it shouldn't matter whether they're teens or not. They still need to have a dedicated bedtime. There still need to be boundaries about your room and your time and what you do and how that encroaches upon you. So one of the things that we did is when our kids became teens is we made sure that our house was a place where all of their friends came because I wanted to see them. Mm-hmm. And we ended up parenting some of their friends. But I loved it because we were the cool parents. Everybody wanted to be around us. They wanted us at their events and things like that. They didn't mind. They weren't running from us. My kid was like, this is my mom. You know, it was cool because this is my dad. And so my husband, you know, would host tournaments for them and get involved with them. But we would let them know, like, look, your mom and I, we're going to be going out. So a lot of times we did a lot of our things away from the house. So those really sexy times that we scheduled those away from the kids. Then we had things that we did with the children. But ultimately, they had their curfew times. And then we had that time where we were shutting down our house so that we could have that privacy and the autonomy to do what we wanted. You know, one thing that changes for sure is you're just not going to be lovemaking all over the house. That's for sure.
Right. Because that for sure, the teenager that you have not seen hardly during daylight hours in 14 weeks, that's when they're coming through the door.
Yeah. So you can't do your sexy dressing. All of that is like, people don't understand. It curbs all of that. And those are things that, you know, really did keep your pulse, you know, racing. But you can't do it around those teens because it's just awkward. It's just not cool.
It's not. The biggest takeaway here, and it sounds so simple when we say it and is so difficult to put into practice. We as parents have to remember that our relationships are foundational. They are foundational, and our relationships' well-being directly impacts our children's well-being. When parents are, you know, fulfilled and emotionally satisfied, that affects how we parent, how we show up. And Dr. Jackie, we can't neglect the fact that our kids learn about relationships from us.
Mm-hmm. You said a mouthful. Mm-hmm. When I got married, I didn't really realize it. My husband is two. There's only two, he and his brother, as the offspring of his father and his mother. Whereas for me, I come from, it's five of us. There were five children. So I'm used to like all the ruckus and, you know, mm-hmm. we argued, we fought, and it was nothing. But to my husband, it was like end of the world. If you had an argument, totally different lifestyle. He never saw his parents argue. I saw my parents argue. I saw them make up. So it was nothing to me. I saw that, yes, you might have an argument, but it's not the end of the world. To him, it was different. Mm-hmm. So I always teach couples learning histories is essential to your success. Because if you are outside of having the proper context to your loved one's behavior, your ability to empathize, to embrace and meet them where they are is definitely short-circuited. Once I understood that this is how he feels and how he sees it, I knew how to respond when there was a disagreement. I knew how that I needed to console him and make him understand, this is not the end of the world. We're just going to talk. We're just talking. Think about it. Where you grew up in a home where nobody raised their voice. In my house, there's nothing but ruckus. You know, everybody's waiting until you have to inhale to jump in and put, you know, and we're always fighting or arguing or laughing and joking about something. So it was a carefree sort of atmosphere, but very excited. And everybody's all over the place. With he and his brother, everybody was quiet. They're the children of two elder people. Mm-hmm. She was 30 when she got married. And so think about older parents, you know, more settled, you don't have all that young energy. So things were quiet and the pace was slower. Whereas my mom was married at like 17 and she has these five kids and it was just a free for all. So understanding the difference in the perspective of how we come to our relationship, how we engage in a disagreement or in a challenging circumstance or situation, understanding history really does give us the latitude, the bandwidth, the ability, even the desire to want to understand and support our partner.
And it affects how we parent, because our default in parenting, as we all know, is how we were parented, even if we don't want it to be that way.
Unfortunately.
Oh, man.
What do you do?
I think the same holds true for our relationships too, right? I mean, we pretty much all of us can think of things that our parents did that we either want to or don't want to do in our relationship. And often we find ourselves defaulting to it anyway, because that's what we know better than anything else. It takes it takes some deliberate effort to develop like different grooves, doesn't it?
Well, I think you, if you realize that this is your case, which I think is a situation for most people, learn the skill sets. I don't think that there's anything wrong with marriage in America. We just lack the skill sets. And as technology prevails, it's becoming more and more of a chasm between people that are well-equipped to develop the communication skills, the problem-solving skills that are necessary in close and intimate relationships. But hey, it's not, again, it's something that you can acquire. I have tools that are virtual. There are things all over the planet that are virtual that you can plug into and learn and overcome those shortcomings. You know, what I love is, I remember when I was growing up, people would say, you're going to be just like your dad. And it was seen as being the most horrid thing to say to someone, particularly if that person's life is not very well received, right? But why I look at it a little bit differently, you're coming from that same life code. Life gives you the opportunity to look 20, 30 years into the future and see who you will be because you share that life code. And you get the opportunity, the power, right, to decide, I'm going to be that person, but without this, but without that. And now you can put in the work and you can redirect yourself so that those outcomes don't emerge for you.
Powerful words from Dr. Jackie. Yes, we can change. We have the power. More after these words from our sponsors.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series. Talk with boys like a pro about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions. And that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us.
And so be empowered. Be empowered. Get for yourself what it is that you need to make sure that you build out the life and create the trajectories that you want to see repeated. Because remember, you're not doing it just for yourself. You're also doing it for those children that you're raising that are going to become a byproduct of your own choices.
But this brings to mind a little bit of this place where I see it in parenting. Mom reads all the parenting books. Dad doesn't want to read the parenting books. Mom wants to do the inner work and the personal growth. Dad's busy, you know, out working 2 jobs. So how do you bring those 2 aspects together when... And broad generalization, but typically it is the woman that has more of a sense of things could be better than they are. And the man's just kind of like, things are fine. What's the problem?
Yeah, because most divorces are initiated by a woman. Why? Yeah. Because Women are concerned about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So and how do we cross that gap?
Well, I think two things. I'm going to start with people that are now dating and looking at marrying. To me, the biggest, biggest tool that you can have, the greatest, most effective tool is compatibility. So in my practice, I've developed the 7 pillars of compatibility. So you want to be compatible. That means that you're going to share the same values. A lot of your outlooks are going to align. This is the foundational work for you to determine, is this person going to be willing to work through all of the challenges of your relationship? Listen, the reason why there are people divorced a lot of times, if it's not that there was some sort of abuse or neglect, is because people's expectations were not met, but therefore they did not feel happy in that relationship. For whatever reasons, that you grew apart, whatever was the genesis of them, that's really why people aren't together. But if you have someone that's committed to doing the work so that whenever one goes a little left and, you know, we need to really course correct, they're willing to roll up their sleeves and do the work to correct that. If they're not willing to read the books, if they're not willing to go to counseling, if they're not willing to see someone, you see? And so for me, I know in my marriage, as long as my husband's willing to do the work, because God knows there's been endless challenges that have come up in 34, you know, years. We can make it, because I believe when there's a will, there's a way. So I would say that's the first thing. Foundationally, make sure that you're both going into it understanding that marriage is a challenge, because it's been so romanticized in television mm-hmm. and movies that we have the wrong concept of it in the first place. So how can we have the right outcome? Yeah. Marriage does not make you happy forever. That person is not charged with your happiness. You need to bring your own happiness. You need to come full and complete and then come together with someone else that is complete. You will have ebbs and flows in marriage, right? So you're not happy all the time. You might have periods. I heard that Michelle Obama was watching something that she said, and she was saying that there were years where she was unhappy, but it's for better or for worse. Because
I do love that she admitted that. I love that she admitted that, because it normalizes it, because it's so easy when you are outside of somebody else's relationship to be like, wow, you know, look at that. I mean, Michelle and Barack, come on. Like, he seems to adore her and vice versa. There is no relationship that is like that all the time. Fun. We just laid Rosalind Carter recently passed. What a love story.
Oh my
gosh. What did I hear? 72 years. They were married. Yeah. 72 years. They got married when she was 18 and they made it through. I mean, all that. He didn't even tell her he was running for the Senate, and they not only continued a relationship, they both really liked each other throughout their life. I just want to know how, you know, and what you're saying is there's really no great secret. It's
we have the wrong definition of what it looks like.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like what most people think. And it took me a while to find that out. I've been in pursuit of understanding relationships and marriage since I was like a little kid. It was something that fascinated me. And I understood that you rise or fall on a good or a bad relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship like marriage or in dating, or whether it's a friendship, a job with a boss. Mm-hmm. I mean, you rise or fall. So I wanted to learn how to master good relationships, how to build them out. And so imagine understanding that marriage is not what I thought. I thought I was going to put on this beautiful white gown and it was going to be my day. I was going to be princess for the day. And then it was going to be all this wonderful thing. And it's not. There are a lot of wonderful things, but it's just like life. A lot of times what's happening to us is just life, but we feel so bad about it because it's happening to us, but it's just life. And marriage is messy, as are all relationships. It's just, it ebbs and it flows. There's ups and downs, and that's life. There's nothing magical about it. But when you have love and respect for one another, when you have rules and boundaries that govern your relationship, and you've done a lot of the work working to maintain it, it's a beautiful thing. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life. I love being married. I love being married to that man. I call him my bear. You know, have all of the years been great? No, they haven't. Has he put in 100% effort at all times? No. But that's when your commitment to one another comes into play. And you have to man up. You got to put on your big girl panties. He's got to put on his, and you got to do what you need to do during those seasons. And sometimes you just don't have it. Mm-hmm. That person has to carry you. They have to carry the lion's share until you can get back into that space where you can again.
I think that's really important to recognize that. I think of what my grandparents told me, my grandmother told me, you know, you're going to give 99% in your marriage, and, you know, and it's going to ebb and flow. And so recognizing that and staying out of resentment and thinking that it's going to be like this forever. So, you know, you're in that parenting, the infant, new baby stage, and you think this is it, this is how it's going to be. And realizing just as your children are growing and changing, your marriage and your relationship is too, and that you can affect change within your relationship. And it starts with you, not with him.
I love that. You change you, everything else around you changes.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Putting the time and effort into working towards good relationships, good communication, good problem solving skills. That is the core of life. That, as you said, it's relationships, it's parenting, it's friendships, it's work. You guys, listeners, you know, I'm all about like 2-for-1, 4-for-1. You put your effort into figuring out how to be better in a relationship, into developing communication skills, and it will impact every aspect of your life. And Jackie, you've alluded to the fact that there's a lot of resources out there. Like, we don't have to just make this up and try and figure it out for ourselves. What are some resources that you recommend for listeners who want to do this work?
Well, first of all, I have to recommend drjackie.com with a Q, J-A-C-Q-U-I-E, drjackie.com. We also have a host of resources there. One of the things that I credit for me being married for 34 years is my husband and I had a plan. We talked about almost any possible challenge that could come up. Because as I said, I've noticed that in my practice, there are 7 domains or pillars of marriage. You build those 7 pillars strong, you're guaranteed a marriage that will go the distance. The other, that's 80% of the equation, is compatibility. Doing that work on the front end, instead of trying to make a square peg fit in a round hole, it is a big part of the success story. But the other part is talking about the things and coming up with how you will run your marriage before you say I do. So that you know whether there's any non-negotiables, you know what they are and whether they're present in that relationship. You know, I even have people to give their top 10 and put them in the order of what you need, not what you want in a marriage. You have to have those top 7 items. Not having them is tantamount to a non-negotiable. Yeah, and on that, you're going to turn inward or you're going to turn outward in that relationship. So my husband and I talked through all of these different things, and I've categorized them on our relationship keys portal. And so you get to take a compatibility quiz to see how you're aligning, whether you're looking at, is this person a good person for me to marry? It's a tool for that, but then it's also a tool if you're already married. Because remember, we come to marriage as one person, but we evolve over time. So you're no longer the person you were when you first got married. You want to make sure as we evolve, are we still finding touch points where we are still aligned? And so if not, that quiz is going to identify the areas where you need work, and you're going to be able to tune in and get the work accomplished so that you begin to comb through those tangles. And so those 7 different constructs, I wanted to just give you those pillars, is marital beliefs. Marital beliefs is the role that you envision all your life playing as a spouse. It's also the role that you envision your spouse playing. It is one of the sneaky hidden ones that most people do not talk about because it's so cerebral. It's more in your mind. It's like those pictures that you see. But those things need to be espoused. You need to talk about them. You need to find points of agreement. And anytime that there's not a point of agreement, you need to learn to negotiate those through so you can proceed. The second one is morals and values, which is your core self, is what you think is important in life, is what you govern yourself by, right? That's your core self. Your personality is different, whether you're type A or type B. It has nothing to do with your morals and your values.
Right.
Family covers how you deal with in-laws, outlaws, how you deal with how many kids we're going to have, who's going to raise them, how are we going to raise them? You know, what kind of monies are we going to put towards their education? What do we value to teach them religiously, educationally, all of that? Then you have your finances, which is, are we going to have a joint saving account, separate accounts? Are we taking each other's debt as one, or are you paying yours separate? Everything about finance. How do we invest? Do we have savings accounts? Do we have investments? What types of investments? And then you have religion, and you have how you handle your disagreements. Sex is different than intimacy.
Yeah.
Intimacy does not always involve sexual interaction, mm-hmm. but it's the way that your souls meet. And it's one of the things that you really have to cultivate to make sure that you keep prevalent in your relationship. So how you have sex, your modality of sex, the number of encounters over a period of time. People fight a lot about it, but they don't want to talk about the sexual part. But it can make or break a good relationship. So those are those seven pillars. And so people can plug in because they're video lessons that are, you just plug in, they're a couple of minutes a piece, and they'll help you to give your talking points on how to realign in those areas to regain cohesion and unity. So I really recommend that. I think I credit it for definitely giving me the longevity in my relationship. And I can tell you that 80% of the things that we talked about 30 something years ago have happened. So it wasn't anything that we needed to argue about. We knew what we said we were going to do should this happen. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example of one. If somebody in this family does something to me that's offensive, or there's a problem that develops, I don't address it. We talk together. He addresses it. Why? Because his family loves him. They're going to be mad at him for a minute, maybe, but they'll get over it. It's going to be a different scenario for me. So we take care of anything relating to our, if the genesis is within our own families, we handle as the first line of defense for one another. Even how we deal with loaning money, or if somebody wants to come and stay with us, we agree that it has to be an agreement between us. If it's an amount of money, whether we are going to loan it, that's an agreement. We have to agree on the amount and the terms for repayment, or if it's just going to be a gift. Ordinary everyday things, because this is what I hear in my practice as the things that deliver a death nail to some of these relationships, because they begin to really struggle and argue and develop great deep contention around mm-hmm. some of these simple things.
It seems easier to not have those conversations for a lot of people, right? They're potentially unpleasant. They're potentially contentious. We'll just sort of skip past all that because I really love you and we're going to be together forever. And we get to have this really cool wedding. And what I'm hearing is true is that we're not really saving ourselves any time. And we're definitely not saving ourselves any heartache by skipping past those conversations, because the tough stuff is going to come up.
Mm-hmm. But it becomes so simple, though, when you have them on the front end. Now you know who you're really marrying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to say that again. Now you really know who you're going to be marrying. You know the stance on a lot of things before it ever happens. So when it happens, there's no need to argue or to figure out how we're going to broach the conversation. It's already been had. So I go into this relationship eyes wide open. Now, is there room for things to happen that are just we couldn't figure out hypothetically? All I can say, I don't have very many that have happened over the course of these past 30 some odd years. Most of it is akin to or exactly what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So even in my book, Blueprint for Marriage, I go through the conversations that need to be had, and I map out what those questions and things are that need to be addressed too. So that if you don't know how, it could be something that becomes a tool that's a discussion tool for you all when you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's so important. Most people go to see somebody for premarital when they've already gotten engaged and they've already set a date. And a lot of times if they found out that this is not really who I thought they were, they're not going to cancel the plans.
Exactly.
They're going to go full speed ahead. So I want to make sure that I equip them with a tool that enables them to really know who they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
What words of encouragement would you have for our listeners who most of them are probably partnered right now? And maybe they may not be with the parent of their son, but you know, that's somebody you got to deal with anyway. Once you have children, you're there. And they listen to those seven pillars and they're overwhelmed because what words of encouragement do you have for listeners who want better, stronger relationships and they're just overwhelmed right now?
I would say that I make relationships simple. So the reason why I developed the tools was for that very purpose, so that you would have a pragmatic method, just a simple, easy, rightly, quickly applicable manner in addressing your relational issues. And so one of the things I do that I really don't love doing because it's laborious is making room for the things that continue to distribute tools to people that are listening. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of technology now.
You are such an amazing resource. Thank you so much for all the work you do. As you're talking, I'm just thinking about how we talked about the beginning of this foundation that we create in our adult relationships, and we are modeling that for our children. Our sons are seeing us be in relationship so that when they grow up, maybe they don't have to do as much hard work as we have had to do, and that it's more just a part of who they are, this communication and in-depth questioning for ourselves and our potential partners. So thank you so much for this time. And listeners, of course, everything will be in the show notes, but it's drjackie.com, Jackie with a Q, J-A-C-Q-U-I-E. Thank you, Dr. Jackie.
Thank you so much for having me. I had fun.
If you found this podcast valuable, please share it with a friend. Maybe you know somebody who is looking to get engaged. This could be really valuable for them. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being here. Thanks for supporting our sponsors.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.